Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jen Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is, boom, Nick Wright right there. CC, good to have you back. We got a lot to get to today. We are going to start with Sam Darnold's debut for the New York Jets, which began with a pick six. First snap of his career. Boom, back the other way. As they like to say in football terms, not ideal. Twitter had a field day with that one until Darnold composed himself, turned around, got back out there, and led the team from there, throwing for 198 yards, two touchdowns. The Jets' first-round pick only had four incomplete passes the rest of the game. He also got a lot of help from his defense, who picked off Matt Stafford and Matt Castle, five times. Jets beat the Lions 48-17. Here's Sam Darnold on his first-ever NFL game.
On that interception, I was pretty nervous. I'm not going to lie to you guys. But after that, you know, put it behind me. I think, you know, that after the crowd got really loud after that pick, it was just, you know, oh, shoot. And then I was like, okay, here we go. You know, can't get much worse than that. So it was really that kind of thinking that was going on in my head. And then just, you know, played and knew that we had a good team. We have a really, really good team. So I knew that if I just did my job, took what the defense gave me that I was going to be, you know, able to go out there and look back and have a successful game.
I need a little more light in that press conference, but Sam Darnold was light enough. All right, see, how impressive were Sam Darnold in the Jets in last night's rout? Season opener for them.
Not just the numbers and not just what's on TV, but it's hard to start an NFL game, let alone a career, the way he did. You can't start worse than that. You're on the road. Detroit fans are into football, and they were into that game. Huge interception, momentum in the game. Like, I'm really impressed with how he got it all back together. I like the press conference, the fact that he admitted that I lost my stuff. That was the first play of the game because his parents asked him before the game, because I believe his parents have a lot to do with the success, how they've raised him, how level-headed he is, him and his sister, both Division I athletes at a high level, and how they treated him and everything. It played a role in how he calmed down in this game and realized, I'm a good enough football player, I'm on a good team, and let me get back into the game. I thought the offensive coordinator did a great job. I talked with the team a little over a week ago, and I thought the Jets would be a lot more improved because the confidence they had, not in who's in the room, but more importantly in who Sam Darnold is. He's been a leader ever since he's been at Little League playing football. And Nick looked at me a little side-eye when we had him in the studio because I happened to have my Hall of Fame jacket and I had a Hall of Fame tie. And I gave him the Hall of Fame tie. And people say, oh, now Chris Carter's on the bandwagon. No, this kid is made of the right stuff. I mean, he's been a winner. He wasn't always the top player coming out of high school. I think he was the fifth-ranked quarterback in Southern California coming out of high school. He goes to USC, wins the job, opens up on Monday night in New York City. Phenomenal. You couldn't have a better start for a young kid in a big city like this, turned around a franchise. I'm really, really happy for him. But he showed me something because I know that he panicked. And he admitted that, but he went on to play a spectacular football game. It's hard to be better than he was in a debut.
And how, because it's hard to start worse. It's not like all pick sixes are awful. Worst thing you can do as a quarterback. This one was particularly awful. It wasn't the ball got batted at the line. No. This one was all his doing, and maybe the offensive coordinators to a degree. I mean, he basically throws a cross-field jump pass off one leg. He does everything wrong. Little league type of stuff, really. And you said forget the numbers, but I do want the audience to know what the numbers were from that moment forward. From that moment forward, he completed 80% of his passes for nearly 10 yards per attempt, two touchdowns, no picks, and a 141 rating. From that moment forward, he played a nearly flawless game. He probably could have had gaudier numbers if the Jets weren't beating the brakes off the Lions so badly to where they didn't need to open up the offense much at all once Stafford couldn't stop throwing picks. It was incredibly impressive to overcome that moment because that's the type of thing that he had been waiting for this moment his entire life. And all of a sudden, teams typically, if you give up a defensive or special teams touchdown in the NFL, you lose four out of five games. Mm-hmm. Like, one play like that can cost your team one of its 16 chances to win. And for him to overcome it, man, the Jets have to feel great about their selection, about them trading up to three to be able to go get him.
And wouldn't you say it says more about him as a person, which you talk to a lot, than him as the you know, having those football acumen, those skills, that he was able to compose himself and come out? Because, sure, you can come out with all the skills in the world, but if you don't have the wherewithal to be able to come out, compose yourself as the face of this team, as the youngest kid to ever start, you know, basically an NFL game.
Yeah. 99-year history.
Since the merger, you'd like to think
the Jets said, okay, you know, we love what we have, more because he was able to compose himself than just what he was able to do afterwards.
Well, part of the reason why you draft guys like this is what are their intangibles? Because everyone's got talent. Let's not get on this thing where we say, you know something, give me the guy that's smart and not talented. No. Because there are a lot of guys that have both. And that's what Sam Darnold had. I like the fact that he's a very, very good athlete. You could see that he got out of the pocket. You could see that in the pocket he was very, very comfortable, always kept a nice wide base. He has spectacular arm talent. Like, he's the reason why, before the draft, I thought he was the most ready. He's always ready to throw. He has this little leadership thing, too, and I saw that when I was with the Jets, that it's hard. It was like Baker Mayfield. It's something that we saw. It's just a little intangible that people want to follow him. The Jets got it right. Because I mean, we're going to be going through a lot of, you know, evaluating young players and everything, and very seldom can you just stop and say, regardless of what happens to him, we believe that the Jets got it right.
Well, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I couldn't watch yesterday's New York Jets game without thinking about the New York Giants, the team that could have prevented the Jets from getting it right, and the team that is – the Jets traded up to three on speculation. They traded up to three with the hope, all right, we like two of these guys. What are the odds the Jets really thought there's three franchise quarterbacks in this draft?
Yeah.
They probably felt – we like two of these guys.
Right.
Maybe both will be available. At least one of them will be available.
And it was on the table that both of them would be gone. That the Giants would take a quarterback and the Browns would take a quarterback.
It absolutely was on the table that they could have been sitting there and saying, all right, do we take Project Josh Allen? Do we take Josh Rosen? Or did we trade up to three so we can draft Saquon Barkley? Like, and the Giants, no matter what anyone thinks of Eli, you now have good reason to believe the Jets are in good position at the most important position in sports for the next decade. And the Giants are wondering if they're in a good position instead of the next 10 years for the next 10 games. It's not just because they're New York and New York. It's because they were drafting 2 and 3 and because there was so much discussion surrounding whether or not the Giants should take this exact player in that spot.
All right, if the Jets were happy with their decision to take Sam Darnold, how do you think the Lions felt on the other side with their decision to bring in Matt Patricia as their head coach? How alarmed were you by what Detroit did and how much they struggled last night?
I'm not alarmed, but, I mean, the Lions have been the Lions for 50 years. There's a reason why Stafford hadn't won a game in the playoffs. I don't think they've won a playoff game in over 20 years. I mean, so it's I'm not surprised. I know last night they was probably looking for Jim Caldwell's number. They fired him after two 9-7 seasons.
One of them with a playoff berth attached to it.
Just because you sit in a room with people don't mean that you're going to get everything from. And as far as Belichick and his disciples, it's real. I mean, look at the last five coaches. Charlie Weiss, Romeo Cornell, Eric Mangini, Josh McDaniels, and Bill O'Brien. All these guys have losing records as head coaches. Now, I don't know what Belichick does to him. He tells him, hey, leave all your football knowledge in New England. That's the New England way and go about your business. But I think it's more than Belichick. I think it's number 12. Because all these guys, when they leave number 12, that's what they face. Am I surprised about Matt Stafford? No. He was going to have one or two games like this. He's been doing that the last 5 or 6 years. He's going to throw 3 or 4 interceptions. The problem is we normally see him throw 400-yard games in a row, and then he has a bad one. You're like, that's a...
And they typically don't happen at home. Last year, he only had 3 picks at home in the whole season. This year, he had 4 picks at home in the opener. But one thing that's tough about week 1 is we assume we know who's bad and who's good. And so when a team that we think's going to be bad beats another team, we're like, well, that team must be awful. So like week one last year, we thought the Jags were going to be mediocre again. So when the Jags, we made the Jags week one dominating win over Houston about Houston must be trash rather than Jacksonville could be good. When we saw the Vikings put up 30 on the Saints in week one last year, we're like, oh, same old Saints. Defense can't stop nobody. Instead of being like, wow, the Vikings are awesome. So in week one, we got to be careful about who we're giving value to and who we're giving credit to.
Week number one, you have more overreaction. One reason is because people are so excited about football. They're so excited about their teams. And I can't believe I waited all this long. And, yeah, my team's better. Or I waited all this time and, oh, my season's over with. Yeah. So it there's too much of that in week number one. Great observation.
All right, we're going to take a lot more about this game. There was another Monday night game last night as well. Coming up, what went so wrong for John Gruden and the Raiders? Next on First Things First. First Things First podcast is on the way, but first a quick word from Lightstream. If you're thinking about saving money this summer, why not start by paying less interest on your credit card balances? Refinance with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. It's an easy way to save hundreds to thousands of dollars and lower your interest rate. Lightstream offers credit card consolidation loans from 5.89% APR with autopay. You could get your funds as soon as the day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a great interest rate and no fees. So say goodbye to high-interest credit cards this summer and start saving with Lightstream. And get this. First Things First listeners can save even more with an additional interest rate discount on top of Lightstream's already low rates. The only way to get this discount is to go to Lightstream.com/FTF. That's Lightstream, LightStream.com/FTF. Subject to credit approval, rate includes a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit Lightstream.com for more information. To the NFL now, Sam Darnold connecting with Robbie Anderson for his first career touchdown pass. That's your guy now, C.
Robbie Anderson, man, been spending some time with him. The kid's going to make some big plays for the Jets. People thought the Jets didn't have weapons. Sam Darnold's going to develop some weapons. First game, Nick. 7 different receivers with those 16 completions. That's one of the more impressive stats of his first night.
Terrell Pryor had a nice game. Quincy Enunwa had a nice game. Now, this was Robbie's only catch, but it was a hell of a catch, and it was a huge play. And this was when the game was still close before Stafford started throwing the game away.
All right, finally, Raiders-Rams, Marshawn Lynch. Let us know why he's in beast mode all the time.
All right, we got some really, really low IQ plays here by a couple of the Rams. You've got Aqib.
58.
You got 58 jumping on the pile. And watch, Aqib Talib is trying to force a fumble by pulling him into the end zone. Watch Talib on the back end, pulls him in, 58 jumps on top.
Talib, he's not. That's not a bad play.
Okay, so just 58?
58, yes.
Yeah.
Let me say 58.
58, he jumps on the pile right there and helps him go in the end zone.
Not real smart.
Come on, guys.
Beast Mode had a bunch of assistants.
a bunch.
Pushing him.
A lot in white jerseys.
Yes.
All right, let's stick with that game. John Gruden's debut versus the Rams' debut since none of their players really played this preseason. Todd Gurley picked up where he left off last season, 147 total yards and a touchdown, while Derek Carr struggled. He threw 3 picks in a 33-13 loss. Not the way John Gruden wanted it to go, but he did show up at the podium afterwards anyway, ready for a barrage of questions.
Well, obviously, I don't think it was a smashing debut. By any sense, we need to get more pass rush, and that goes for all of us.
Well, there was bad throws, which there were bad throws, miscommunications, all that kind of stuff. So stuff that usually actually does happen in a first game, but you don't really, you know, pay the consequence for them all the time. But we did today, and that's my fault. I got to do a better job for our team, and I will.
All right, Nick, coach said they need a better pass rush. Carr said he needs to have some better throws. Does that pretty much sum it up? What was your reaction to the Raiders' struggles last night?
That's part of the story, but it doesn't sum it up. My reaction last night was that looked like a really poorly coached football team. You can't have 145 yards of penalties in the first half And I know there were two big pass interference penalties, but they had 10 first-half penalties. That's the most in the database I have access to of anyone on record. First-half penalties, any game since at least 2001. You can't go into the game with a halftime lead where, by the way, those scripted opening plays, they looked great. Marched right down the field. Once the script was gone, what did you do offensively? And in the second half, get dominated the way they did. And so to get outscored 23-0 from halftime on after having a 13-10 lead. Yes, Derek Carr made some awful mistakes. And yes, the Raiders, man, if they only had an all-pro pass rusher, it would be nice. But as Gruden is the face of this team, and when you have every single one of your offensive linemen have a pre-snap penalty in the first half, every single one, like that, if that's not coaching, then I don't know what is. I don't know what you're doing. So a lot of takeaways from Oakland, none of them very good.
Now, I got to ease up on Gruden just a little bit because guys jumping offside, that's not the head coach's fault. I mean, they're out there. Everyone knows the snap count. Now, it was a loud environment. Yeah, it was. But they're the home team.
Right.
All right. But that's not the coach's fault. That's lack of mental focus. All right. You can't blame that on the coach. These guys being paid a lot of money. These are grown men. These aren't kids. Now, John Gruden's got a certain responsibility, but he can't manage the game when guys don't know what they're supposed to do. Offensive players, the advantage that we have, we know where the ball's going. You know the other advantage that we have? We know the snap count. So that's just some of the basics in football that you're going to see early in the season. So that's not Gruden's fault. The lack of creativity in the second half, the lack of use of Jordy Nelson and Amari Cooper, those are all things that, yes, John Gruden, he has to be able to answer for those. Now, as far as him not having no pass rush, that would be like me emptying my refrigerator, emptying all my cupboards, taking all my groceries and giving it away to some people who deserve it.
For future groceries.
Yeah. And then I sit around like Jenna and say, I'm hungry.
Okay.
because based on your decisions that I'm going to eat a certain amount of things.
To come out of the press conference and be like, oh, yeah, we really lacked a pass rush.
Well, let me hold up. I have the stat sheet here. I want to check real quick. The 2019 first-round pick, zero quarterback hits, zero sacks. 2020 first-round pick, he had the same. One more thing, $60 million of cap space. He also had zero quarterback hits. So those assets didn't really get the job done for him last night.
Yeah, now going late into the fourth quarter, were the Raiders still in this game? Yes, just like an NFL game, a guy makes a play. They're within one score. Yes, the Rams are just a better football team. So let's not, as Nick said, let's not overreact to John Gruden and everything he's doing, all right? If the beverages aren't cold in Oakland, it's going to be his fault. Everything's going to be his fault, but let's give him the things that we know that he's responsible for. The overall lack of discipline with the team, which you bring in John Gruden there for, they did not have that. The lack of big plays or creativity. Now, Nick, I know that both of you, we mentor people, but you're not thinking that one day the mentee is going to outshine me, not until I'm long over. But that's what we had there. I had a guy that was really, really creative, and that's Sean McVay. Yeah. And then you have the guy who supposedly taught him that. Obviously, that book must be a little old or stale because the young prodigy has added volume to that. So to me, those were the impressive things about it. The first 15 plays, I thought you made a great point. They did move down the field, getting the ball to Cook, right. The tight end, isolating the strong safety in coverage. But after those adjustments, what did they do? And they didn't make many offensive adjustments.
And this is something we saw also in that Bears-Packers game.
Yes.
Where the Nagy had those first 15 plays scripted brilliantly. And the Bears moved the ball. But as soon as they ran out of script, they ran out of the ability to move the football. Now, in that Bears-Packers game, you can say, all right, that's Mitch Trubisky. It's a second-year player, new coach. That is not the case with Oakland and their quarterback. And that is the overall bigger concern. Like Gruden said, the subtext of trading away Khalil Mack was, we already got a $20-plus million-a-year player. He's our quarterback.
And he's part of the reason why I came out of broadcasting booth.
Right.
He said it, to coach you.
Best quarterback I've ever had. Eat that, Rich Gannon. How you feel about that, Brad Johnson? So that's what he said. Now, we also should note, that's a little different for Gruden. Gruden, all of his success has come with older quarterbacks. all 30-plus, and all guys who would take Gruden's brand of coaching because they had been journeymen turned starters, guys that weren't necessarily fully established, minted franchise quarterbacks. Derek Carr looked awful. Derek Carr was throwing the ball away without pressure on third down as if there were pressure. And listen, the pick six to Marcus Peters is going to happen, but this pick here, I don't know how you make that throw. You feel a pass rush that isn't there yet, and you just throw it up for grabs. That was driving in a 10-point game. The game is still, you're still alive right there. That's a brutal play. That I can't put on Gruden. That's on their quarterback.
And let's just look at the other side of it, too. I mean, yes, the Raiders definitely did struggle, but the Rams played a fairly complete game yesterday, even though they hadn't played together a lot in the preseason, and it took them at least a half, CC, before they were all in sync, but it seemed like that second half they were sort of firing on all cylinders.
Pro football is about trying to fill out the opposition. No one's trying to knock a team out in the first or second quarter. We know these games come down typically to one score, and we're trying to get into the third quarter, make the halftime adjustments, and in the fourth quarter, you're really going to see the best of each team because you got three quarters of action, you've made all the adjustments. That's what if the Rams are going to be the team that we thought that we think that they are, that these are how they're going to win games. You have to feel teams out, feel what they're doing. McVay called a great game. Goff played a good game. They took a lot of shots down the field. So even his completion percentage, I believe, will be a lot higher. But they attacked down the football field. So this is a good football team. So let's not overreact to who the Raiders lost to. I love how they utilized Todd Gurley. Early just used him as a decoy.
And then late, they ended the game with him. I mean, in the second half, he had 89 rushing yards. He had another 20 through the air. First half, just 4 carries for 19 yards. He's the best player on their offense, the offensive player of the league in last year. And they know the Rams, dating back to last season, they're 10-0 when he gets at least 20 touches. But they were, like you were saying, feeling out early, and then they used him for the knockout blow. Now, I also think Goff's stats, because Goff's a guy I'm watching this year, Goff's stats are not as good as they should have been because they drew 2 critical pass interference penalties. Those are 80 yards worth of passes to Brandon Cooks. He doesn't get credit for. He played a better game than the stat sheet says.
All right, the Rams over the Raiders 33-13. Week 1 of the NFL is in the books. Take a break. Coming up on the other side, is Gronk already the best tight end of all time? Tom Brady thinks so. That's next on First Things First. On Saturday, Kent State heads to Happy Valley to take on 11th-ranked Penn State. That's 11:30 Eastern on FS1 and on the Fox Sports app. Plus, SMU faces Michigan on the Big Ten Network. Check it all out on Saturday.
Excited to watch my guy Jim Harbaugh on Michigan on Big Ten Network Saturday.
He's going to look like a genius against SMU.
To go
he looked
viral.
Great this weekend against Western Michigan. Directional schools, baby.
Aaron Rodgers' epic Week 1 performance set the world on fire. And yesterday, 2 more people chimed in. LeBron James tweeted, quote, "Woke up this morning saying to myself, Aaron Rodgers, you're incredibly good at football. My guy, one of the GOATs, thank you." To which D. Wade replied, "That's funny because I woke up saying to myself, Aaron Rodgers, you're incredibly good at football. But, sir, why my Bears all the time?"
That's the Chicago and D. Wade coming out.
And if you think Aaron Rodgers' numbers are good, Nick, which you always tell us, man, mm-hmm. best all-time passing rating, he's better against the Bears.
His numbers against the Bears are make-believe.
Yes.
I don't have going into that game, I think in his last however many, it was like 16 touchdowns, 1 pick. He's spectacular against that team in particular. He tortures them.
All right, time for some stories to start your morning now. Still talking about how the Browns didn't lose on Sunday, nor did they win. Josh Gordon scored a touchdown in the tie with the Steelers. He wasn't even supposed to start. Cleveland's head coach, Hugh Jackson, called Gordon starting a miscommunication with Todd Haley. C, what did you make of that and of Gordon's performance?
The performance was amazing. I mean, being out of football and where this team was in the time of the game. They needed a play. Josh came up with the play. They were playing cover 2 there. He's able to get to the end zone before and make the catch and get down before that safety collisions him or knocked the ball away. That was an amazing play. As far as the miscommunication, I don't care. He's out there. Put the best players out there. It wasn't a big deal to me.
Yeah, I don't really care about the start, didn't start. He played the first play and then sat out the rest of the first and second series, then played the majority of the rest of the game. I think he had 69 snaps. But, I mean, this was good coverage. And
yes.
An excellent throw, an even better catch. And your observation about getting down, because if he doesn't get down, not only does he take a huge hit, that ball can get jarred loose, and then it's not a touchdown. Like, that was a special play that ended up being the last point scored of the game.
Moving on to the Jaguars now. Bad news for the struggling offense. According to Doug Marrone, Leonard Fournette has a minor hamstring injury. No word on whether he'll miss any time yet. But, Nick, how big of a deal is this for the Jaguars offense?
It's potentially a big deal, even though I like T.J. Yeldon. But you kind of have to bake this in with Leonard Fournette. This was an issue in college. This was an issue throughout last year where he's a guy who, at every level that I'm aware of, he's dealt with these nagging injuries that either make him limited or knock him out a week or two.
Yeah, I'm not so much worried about the soft tissue, but you're right. In high school and at LSU, he's a collision guy. So he's going to bang into people, and he's going to get hurt. It's more importantly, they face New England this weekend, so you'd like him at full strength when they face the Pats.
All right, finally, the Bills are still undecided who will start week two versus the Chargers. They're stuck between Nathan Peterman, who threw for 24 yards on Sunday, Josh Allen, who supposedly isn't as good as Peterman, or me. CeCe, who should the Bills start at quarterback?
Wait, I ain't like that one.
Shoot, is it me?
You don't like it. You got one head, you got one tail, so you didn't like either one.
This is what's going to happen. This is a bad situation, and I'd much rather him put Peterman in, and the reason why, because if one of these careers is lost or is damage is done to one of these kids' psyche,
yep.
I have to sacrifice Peterman because I got Josh Allen, he still got hope. Like, he hasn't lost football. He hasn't thrown interceptions. Yeah. Like, he still got hope, and with this offensive line, you do not want a quarterback. Nick and I, we talk about it all the time. You can get your career knocked out of you in the first couple years. All right? He has no chance of being successful in Josh Allen. All right? We are a sum of our decisions. And when they decided, after making the playoffs, after this long drought, that we're going to move away from Tyrod Taylor, and you don't make the right decision, they thought they had something in A.J. McCarron. No, didn't have anything. Peterman, he still might be an NFL quarterback, but he's in a bad situation. He should be sitting somewhere learning. Now we got two kids not ready for pro football. There is no good choice. With that offensive line, I mean, Shady McCoy could only do so much. Like, it's not a good decision, but I have to go with Peterman because I've invested too much in Josh. If Josh fails, a lot of
You're
people
finished.
Are going to get fired.
And, by the way, if you care, next week or this week, Chargers. Bosa might be back. We don't know, but they got Ingram either way. And the week after that, Minnesota. So have fun. And how did they get the draft capital to move up to ultimately get Josh Allen? Oh, they traded away their left tackle. That was one of the moves they made. Like, I get it, but when you say a sum of your decisions, even if you're watching and you're like, man, Tyrod stinks. He's a check down guy. He was 15 of 40 this weekend. Okay, fine. Sam Bradford was available. The team that went out and got him, by the way, they said, we're drafting a quarterback still, but we're going to spend our salary cap room to get him so our young guy doesn't have to start. Case Keenum was available. Teddy Bridgewater was available. Guys were available to where it be placeholders or just be a veteran. Josh McCown, like just to be a veteran guy to where you don't have this awful choice. Like, it would not be fair to Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. But, and I know we can kind of flippantly say, you know, Peterman's got to be the sacrificial lamb. But Nate Peterman has become a national punchline, and it is not his fault. He didn't campaign for them to bench Tyrod. He didn't campaign. He didn't expect to be put in this situation, but he has, and he's clearly not ready.
Last year when he had that bad game, 5 interceptions, man, the Chargers, they were in protest because they took him out the game. They wanted to keep him in the game.
Yeah.
So now the Chargers are sending flowers and all kinds of things. And Buffalo, please start Peterman again because that's who they're going
to be. It's a great point that was the game. If people forgot that it was the game where he had 5 interceptions in the first half, it was against the Chargers.
And who they play next week?
The Chargers. It's Chargers and then the Vikings. Like, Peterman is – this is here's an interesting dichotomy, and I'll leave it at this. All-time NFL record holder for best quarterback rating through three starts, Tyrod Taylor. All-time NFL record holder for worst quarterback rating through three starts, Nate Peterman.
Get out of here.
And he is their best option. That's the situation Buffalo, a playoff team from last year, has put themselves in.
Should have gone with me. Let's talk some Patriots now.
You got a chance.
On Sunday.
You got a
chance. You wouldn't throw any picks. You just turtle back there. I can outrun you.
Catch me first. Boom. Yeah, yeah. On Sunday, Rob Gronkowski had 7 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown in the Patriots' win over the Texans. On Monday, Tom Brady said Gronk could be the greatest tight end ever to play. I can't wait to see what happens on Tuesday. Here's Brady with high praise for his longtime teammate.
He's the best tight end in the league, probably the best to ever play the game. And when you have that guy on your team, you got to give him looks. He runs every route, every part of the field, short, intermediate, deep, inside, outside, takes hits, run after catch, third down, first down, red area. He's a big part of what we do. And we've all got to match his, you know, greatness, all of us, you know, in order to be a great offense.
Brady literally mentioned every single, I mean.
Every part of being a football player.
That's great evaluation.
When you talk like that, it doesn't sound like there's anything Gronk can do. How crucial is Gronkowski to Tom Brady and the Patriots' success, do you think, Sue?
I've never heard him say that about another player. When he got Randy Moss the best player he ever played with. And he talked about Randy Moss and everything, but he didn't talk about him that way.
Because Randy wasn't great at everything. Randy is one of my favorite players ever and one of the most exciting players to watch. But Randy had weaknesses. It's just that, and you could speak this better than me, that his strengths were so overwhelming, you could ignore them to a degree.
Right. Now, he spoke about him glowingly. He complimented him. He said things. But, I mean, this evaluation, and it's a great football evaluation. Well, what is Gronk good at? He's a great end-of-the-line blocker. What about him as a receiver? You can have him on the end of the line. You can put him in the backfield. You can move him out wide. You can shift him in the slot. That means he must be awful smart. Also, Tom Brady said something last year that Gronk's never had a bad day at work. Gronk is the juice in the Patriots locker room. He comes in, he's jovial, he's upbeat every single day. And that's what Tom Brady is talking about matching. So when Tom Brady comes to work, if he's not on top of his job, you know what? He's not the best Patriot. And that right there is motivation for him. Tom Brady recognizes what he has. He's expressed that in the Patriots. And that's why the Patriots did what we hadn't seen them do. They went in their pocketbook before the season. If this is the greatest tight end and he's the greatest quarterback just told us to keep this guy here. So that's why they gave him more money. He is one of the greatest tight ends ever, if he never plays any football. And he's essential for what they do because what they want is flexibility. And there's no offensive player in the league that's more flexible than Gronk. No player.
He can do everything. And that's what Brady listed. He listed everything. And that when you say flexible, like I'd use the word versatile. Like whatever your game plan is, Gronk can be the best person for it at his position in the league. And you said he's got to be awful smart. And this is where Gronk, I think, does himself a bit of a disservice, but I get it. Gronk has a brand outside of football. I think it's helped him make a lot of money. He's talked about how he's never spent a single of his dollar of his football money. He's only spent endorsement money. And in a team, a league that most guys are faceless, and a team that everybody seems to be faceless, Gronk is kind of a man out on his island. And part of that's his kind of frat boy persona. But his football acumen must be exemplary to be able to do the things he does in that offense and never seem to have a miscommunication with Brady. It never seems like he's run the wrong route. And what shouldn't be understated with Gronk is the armor he wears for a reason. This is one of the toughest football players in the league who every year gets beat up thoroughly throughout the year. And I know he's missed time, but he also has had a hell of a lot more games where he's played through injury or at least the pain than he has had missed games. Like, he wears that brace for a reason. He's dealt with the head injuries, and he comes to work every day. He's one of the truly great players of this generation, and he does belong in the discussion of greatest to ever play his position.
No, I was going to say, you can't look at the things that Brady listed off, the routes, short, intermediate, deep, mm-hmm. inside, outside. He takes hits. He runs it in the red zone, first down. You can't look at that whole list and say, well, can you find something negative? It's just, if you had to, you'd say maybe his durability. Just the fact that he is a little injury prone, but because he plays right. the game so hard with 100% of everything he's got.
Yeah, and when you start to evaluate the players, that's one of the things going to hold him, you know, into the conversation Correct. When you start talking about, because we got tight ends that have been durable. We have tight ends that have been versatile. So playing in this offense and playing with Brady, that also helps everything else out. But the flexibility to be able to use him, the different, I believe he plays six different positions. You know, he plays both tight ends, plays fullback, plays outside wide receiver, plays in the slot, and you can motion him, put him backfield. He can be the H-back. That's how valuable in the kind of football player. And the thing that you mentioned, Nick, is that it happens all the time, man. We judge people based on sometimes how they speak and everything, and sometimes how they look on how good they are at doing their job or what is their IQ to do their job. He's a brilliant football player. You cannot find football players that can go into New England, and that's the reason why they don't. The veteran wide receivers don't do well. The system is too hard.
They have turnover. Yep.
And he has mastered that. Yes, he is. We are watching a very, very special player, and we should recognize
that. And one thing, absent of position, whether it's tight end or wide receiver, he's one of the greatest red zone threats in league history, including wide receivers. Since he came in the league in 2010, as far as red zone production, first in yards, first in catches, first in touchdowns. That's despite missing games. Since he came in the league, with all those games missed, nobody has more red zone catches, more red zone yards, or more red zone touchdowns. Again, that is inextricably tied to Brady. I understand that. But this guy is, on a per-game basis, he's the best to ever play the position. The lack of durability, the fact that Gonzalez seemed like he played for 20 years, that then you have...
He was versatile.
And Tony,
he was smart.
Right. Tony could do all these things, and he played forever, and he never had Brady. So, like, Tony's got a case, and Shannon did all that winning over right. all that time. Like, you can make a case for any of these guys, but Gronk on a per-game basis is as good as I've seen.
All right, let's take a break there. Coming up, can the Dallas Cowboys fix their offense? That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings is here. Hey, Greg.
What's happening?
Good to see you, sir. All right, we got week one in the books. Lots to talk about, especially when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. To say they struggled on offense against the Panthers, a bit of an understatement. They scored just 8 points. They managed just 232 yards. Some have speculated Jason Garrett needs to take over play calling for offensive coordinator Scott Linehan. Others have speculated things we can't even say on television. Garrett dismissed the idea of calling the plays. Take a listen.
I have a tremendous amount of faith in Scott. And, you know, we just have to do a better job collectively as a staff and as an offensive unit to help us move the football and score some points. And, you know, that starts with basic execution, play after play, not beating ourselves, and then finding ways to generate some big plays.
All right, TC, if it's not play calling, what has to change for the Cowboys to have success on offense?
Well, it's easy. That's the typical thing that fans always call for. The offense sputters. Forget about what's the execution. Forget about were we blocking people? Were we doing what the game plan was? This is immediately, let's just change it. That's what people always do. And if the coach is an offensive coach, oh, man, well, let's have him change the play call. This is week number one, and Nick is making sure and it's strange coming from Nick. It should be coming from you. The overreaction. Oh, don't overreact, Nick. Oh, yeah, Nick's this week number one. Don't overreact. Don't overreact in Dallas. We knew that they would have weeks where they would struggle offensively. We talked for the last 5 or 6 months. We couldn't have done a TV program with saying they offensive weapons. It's going to be hard to get some separation. They're going to be 8 guys in the box. That's exactly what played out. And what they do on the outside? Greg, they didn't get any type of separation, didn't make any type of big plays. This is going to be hard for them to win. When you play that type of football, that throwback 1970 type football where you're going to try to jam it up in there, we're going to be bigger and stronger than them, it makes it difficult in this game. Nothing came for them easy. And Greg will tell you, man, as an offensive team, you want to be able to attack teams in a lot of different ways, but you need some easy yardage. That's why now in football, they throw the ball short, throw the ball sideways, do these screens and everything so that they can get some easy yardage. And nothing was easy for the Cowboys on Sunday, Greg.
I have a suggestion.
Okay.
For the Dallas Cowboys. We should make it a Dak-friendly offense.
Well, didn't we do that?
This is what they said all offseason.
Yes.
We want to make it a Dak-friendly offense. That means when I hear Dak-friendly offense, that means get the ball out of Dak Prescott's hands and hand it to Ezekiel Elliott. But for him to only get 15 carries, you talk about we want to pound it, throwback style. They didn't even do that. They only allowed him to touch the ball 15 times from out of the backfield. Like, give the ball to Ezekiel Elliott. Allow your young quarterback to really slowly move into his position of dinking and dunking. But they have no formation variation. They have no variety. This offense is so simplistic because Dak Prescott really, I'm not going to say he has no weapons. I'm just going to say, to your point, they didn't get any separation. They didn't allow him the opportunity to really flourish.
If he has weapons, they were holstered this weekend.
They were
with
definitely
the safety on.
But I'm not going to put it all on them either, because Dak Prescott has to be better. When you are expected to take your team to the next level, the expectation falls on you. The weight falls on you first, and you have to start fitting balls in to windows that aren't going to be wide open. You didn't have separation like that with Dez and Jason Witten, for that matter. You just had a bigger target area. So he has to be able to do that for them to win.
You make a good point there. With Dez and Witten, guys who haven't created a lot of separation because of their age, wear and tear, but they do have very, very good catch radius, larger than the ones that they have now. But I'm sensing that part of your problem with Dallas is either you're going to beat me doing what I do.
Yes.
He's saying, I'm going to give Zeke 30 carries. Or Greg is saying, I'm upset that you haven't developed something that your play action should come off of all of the runs. Sean McVay, if you look at all their – they run outside zone play, but all their play actions come off of that same look. What Greg is saying is Dallas – they have no variance. They don't change their formations. Their passes don't look like their runs, so they're very, very easy to defend. So from a creative standpoint, Dallas fans should be upset because they're not very, very creative. And either you're going to run Zeke 30 times or use him as a decoy, jam him up in the line of scrimmage with the play fake, and be able to create some separation on the outside, Nick.
Listen, the Cowboys had zero plays past the 50 in the entire first half. Against Carolina.
Yes.
Now, Carolina, we said all week that they're going to struggle, that Zeke, it could be a tough game for Zeke because they have a very good front seven. Mm-hmm. But we're in a league with the Jags and the Vikings and the Eagles, so I can't even say Carolina's got one of the three best front sevens in football. They just have a very good front seven, and by the way, they were missing one of their linebackers in Thomas Davis because he's out with a suspension. Star Lotulelei left this offseason. Like, they're a good front seven, but they are not an all-time. And you could not move the ball. Like, it is what has to change? Everything. Schematics have to change. The offensive line.
Don't overreact.
But
we did see this one coming.
And Dak was sacked on Sunday on a higher percentage of dropbacks than any player in the league. So the reason you don't have wide receivers, because you spend all the money on the offensive line. We know Travis Frederick's out. So now you're down to two first-team All-Pros. And Dak is constantly under duress. And Dak doesn't make any plays. It was just everyone gets a share of the blame in this, and I don't see a fix coming. I don't see it's not a situation where, oh, but their star wide receiver's out with suspension. Oh, but this guy's hurt. Oh, but then no. I know Travis Frederick might come back, but if the fix to your offense is getting your center back, that means your offense might be irrevocably broken.
I sat here for 5 weeks. This is exactly what we said was going to happen. Mm-hmm. None of what happened on Sunday should surprise anyone, because we said Dak's not going to have anyone to throw the ball to. Dak's really going to need to step up this year if he wants this to be this could be a big contract situation for Dak. Mm-hmm. They're going to run the ball with Zeke, but maybe not against the Panthers, but they really have to go through him. And then we also heard Jerry Jones say, did we not, we're going to make this a Dak-friendly offense. How much of what you saw on Sunday was play calling? How much of it was personnel?
I think it was a culmination of both. I think when you are a player and you step onto that field, you're going to better execute that play when you trust and you believe in that play that's called. And for me, when I watched the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday, they just didn't have any fire. They didn't have any juice. And then I go back to last year where Ezekiel – or in the year before where Ezekiel Elliott made it known, we're going to do the same – we're going to run the ball. We're going to do the same thing over and over. You just have to stop us. That's who they are. That's where they had most of their success 2 years ago. They have to get back to that. Now, the offensive line has struggled since that first year of them being together, meaning Dak Prescott, yes, and Ezekiel Elliott, their rookie season. But they have pieces there that can get it done.
And the offensive line cannot be the only unit that gets credit but never blame. Here are the five highest-pressured quarterbacks from week one. Cam was fifth. His left tackle's on IR. His right tackle was carted off. Nate Peterman was fourth. We talked about the Bills' offensive line. Mm-hmm. They trade away their left tackle. Tyrod Taylor is third. Joe Thomas retired. It's the Browns. Russell Wilson was second. He was the Seahawks. For years haven't spent money on their mm-hmm. offensive line. It's been the issue. And then Dak Prescott's first. Dak Prescott's the most pressured quarterback. That's maybe Dak's got to get the ball out quicker. Maybe receivers got to get open earlier. That offensive line, Tyron Smith, Lyle Collins, Zach Martin, all the rookie that they drafted in the second round, Connor Williams, they all got to play better. It can't just be Travis Frederick was holding them together.
Outside the numbers, going to spread it around. Allen Hurns, Terrence Williams, starting outside wide receivers. They had one reception apiece, each of them. I mean, I almost had one down there in Miami this weekend. They only had one more than me.
Greg, stick around. Coming up, is Sam Darnold already on his way to being the best quarterback in Jets history? I think Sam Pepper, our producer, wrote that piece. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Greg Jennings, Jets and Lions on Monday Night Football. Sam Darnold's night started with a pick six and ended with praise. Darnold came in after throwing a pick six. He threw for 198 yards, two touchdowns. Also got a lot of help from his defense, who picked off Matt Stafford, Matt Castle, five different times. Jets beat the Lions 48-17 last night. Here is Sam Darnold on his first ever NFL game.
On that interception, I was pretty nervous. I'm not going to lie to you guys. But after that, you know, put it behind me. I think, you know, that after the crowd got really loud after that pick, it was just, you know, oh, shoot. And then I was like, okay, here we go. You know, can't get much worse than that. So it was really that kind of thinking that was going on in my head. And then just, you know, played and knew that we had a good team. We have a really, really good team. So I knew that if I just did my job, took what the defense gave me, that I was going to be, you know, able to go out there and look back and have a successful game.
CeCe, how impressive was Sam Darnold's composure to be able to come back after throwing that interception and completely compose himself and then carry this team to a win?
Very seldom have I ever seen a guy go on to have success like that, especially a young player. I mean, I've gotten into the huddle. And, Greg, a lot of times, too, because quarterbacks and everyone just thinks the quarterbacks always have it together. I've been in the huddle with quarterbacks. They couldn't call the play. They were so nervous, shaking. Scat right. Man, I was like, scat right, double pump. Right. Man, let's go on to scat right, double pump. Let's go. And these things happen. I like that Sam admitted it on the podium after the game. Man, I was nervous. Because it was, they gave him what they thought was a simple bootleg to start the game. What that means is I'm only going to read half the field.
Yeah.
That means I only probably got two guys out there. That means my protection is going to be pretty good. Now, never in the history of football has the ball been completed from that guy going back to the back. The back is just supposed to be taking out his play fake and just running out a total decoy. But he panicked. His brain froze, and he made a little league mistake. Never throw the ball back cross field. Forget about throwing the ball back cross the middle. Back cross the field.
Unless your name is Aaron Rodgers.
And, man, he was able to recover from – so for me, after that, 16 completions to seven different guys. Now, I spoke with the Jets last week as a team, and Todd Bowles has put them in tough situations through training camp. And the reason why, or one of the reasons why, that he was going to go with them because he loved how he responded after making mistakes to go on to have success and to be able to regain his confidence all through training camp. So I wasn't surprised based on talking to Todd Bowles and the Jets coaching staff last week.
I loved his disposition. I loved everything about him, his posture, his – his leadership in the huddle. You heard him calling a couple plays, and there was no stuttering. There was no sense of nerves there. But to that first play of the game, it's interesting because when you go into a game, the first 15 are scripted. And so that first play, when I watch it over and over again, it's almost like he already had in his mind, this guy is going to be wide open, actually. Like, I'm gonna take that throw because he probably was told, a lot of young quarterbacks, the offensive coordinator, Jeremy Bates, look, he's going to be open. They run it all week. You run it against multiple looks. And he just threw it without actually scanning what was over there. But his ability to show resolve and bounce back, that was what was most impressive for me. When I looked at their offense, and I was listening to Brian Griese, he was saying that he talked to Jeremy Bates, their offensive coordinator, and he said, I'm not going to condense the playbook for him because that will hold him to being a rookie quarterback and performing not at his highest level. I'm going to expand the playbook. I'm going to challenge him, mm-hmm. and he will continue to grow, even tonight during this game. And we saw that. We saw him progressively get better and better. When I watched the Sunday night game, Mitchell Trubisky, it was like he thrived early, yes. and then he fizzled out.
As soon as they got off their script in the Sunday night game, like as soon as they had
their
script,
over.
It was over for him. And you saw, by the way, a similar thing with the Raiders last night and Derek Carr and that offense. What you mentioned earlier, Jenna, that we talked all offseason about the Cowboys' lack of weapons. When we were talking about what teams might have less weapons on the outside, what I call skill position guys, absent of the quarterback, we said, well, I mean, the Jets are on that list. The Niners are on the – Buffalo's on – I mean, what you saw yesterday, and I'm not saying he's going to be this every week, but when a quarterback's playing well, all of a sudden, Quincy Enunwa, Terrell Pryor
– they look like they can play.
Right. Quincy Enunwa, Terrell Pryor, and Robbie Anderson. And Robbie, we knew, had some high-level ability if you get everything together. Those three guys were targeted 14 times. Caught 10 of them, 153 yards, 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Quincy Enunwa was playing better than I had seen him play. Terrell Pryor had no drops, no issues.
And did you say 7 different receivers caught balls from Sam Darnold?
Of the 16 completions, 7 different ones. That right there speaks to a veteran quarterback, Nick, not a rookie quarterback.
Right, spreading the ball around. By the way, it also speaks to what the Jets are going to have to do. Because he does not have a true, reliable number one, I'm going to target him 15 times, he's going to come down with 12 catches. And so to have this game after the start he had, to after throwing a pick six, complete 80% of your passes at 10 yards per attempt and a 141 rating, like that's excellent. But there's been 3 other guys in NFL history who first pass of their career was a pick six. Favre, Jameis, and Darnold. Now, that's a hell of a list. However, Favre in his game, they lost by 39. Winston in his game, they lost by 38.
Wow.
In this game, they won by 31, which speaks to the ability to overcome it.
How much of what you saw in that game was the Jets' defense, which was really on point, or what Matt Patricia brought out there with that Lions offense yesterday? They had a tough game overall.
Look, I'm not gonna even go to the Lions side of the ball because Matthew Stafford looked like he was the rookie quarterback yesterday. The interceptions that he threw were just beyond me. But this Jets defense
and Todd Bowles, yes,
and Todd Bowles, like he should get a lot of credit because they were better than what we expected last year. This year, we thought that they would be a little bit better, but we even thought that the offensive line was going to struggle a lot more. But the center, getting the center, Spencer Long, it solidified a lot of their issues mm-hmm. because when you have a guy that can point out the linebackers and where the pressure is coming from, mm-hmm. you can help a young quarterback. You can take some of that pressure off.
That's why he didn't have 30 attempts.
Absolutely. And they sprinkled the run in. They did a great job of balancing themselves and Sam Darnold. But that defense, they gave him opportunity after opportunity, possession after possession. They said they're going to call themselves New Jack City. They were New Jack City last night.
Yeah, they had a couple question marks coming into the game. The secondary, would they get enough corner play? Mm-hmm. Did they have enough explosive players to be consistently throw the ball? Also, the offensive line. In all 3 of those areas, they seem to be much improved, and that leads to – we were talking about Darnold, but, man, that's some good football play. It's being developed there with the Jets.
And to the point on Bowles, you had multiple players after the game say, film study – leading into the game led to them calling out the plays Stafford was running. That from film study, they knew what the hand signals meant and that they knew what passes he was throwing. Multiple guys in the locker room said this.
Now, they have a new head coach, but they have the same offensive coordinator running the same system.
And so that is a credit to coaching. That is a credit to Todd Bowles and that staff getting their defense ready to take advantage of essentially Stafford tipping his pitches. And that's why he had more interceptions yesterday than he had at home all of last season.
All right, well, that was with a lot of time leading up to the first game. Let's see if they can do that again moving forward. All right, Greg, thanks so much for joining us.
Appreciate
Take a break. Coming up, John Gruden has some interesting comments about Khalil Mack. That's next when you hear it, first things first. On Sunday, Kirk Cousins and the Vikings head to Lambeau Field to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Check your local listings for the game in your area. It's a good little rivalry there.
Vikings-Packers, that's a hell of an early game.
All right, we're going to get to the Raiders and Rams in a second.
Nah, you off.
But first, in Virginia, this 12-year-old catches the pass, hurdles a D, scores the touchdown.
They put number one on him for a reason. When we start giving out the jerseys, you can't wear number one unless you're a baller, Nick.
Oh, okay.
So anytime you start seeing the little league, you go out there, you'd be like, okay, check him out. Watch him run and watch him warm up. Who got number one on? Oh, that little 12-year-old. We better put somebody on him. He might be Todd Gurley. Oh, goodness.
And little kids, don't tackle with your head down. Be careful out there.
Thank you. Save your neck like Nick Wright.
Oh, Texas High School football. Did you see this? Look at the assist.
Now, that's a Nick Wright play. That kid right there is too smart for his own good.
Yeah.
Not only helping the team GPA, he out there just thinking way ahead of the play.
One of my football theories that I've been afraid to run by you is running something like this on the sideline in a Hail Mary situation. Make them think you threw it out of bounds and a guy taps it over. But like I said, afraid to run it by you.
No problem. Put that on the long list of things that will be in my garbage can.
All right, in the NFL last night, Sam Darnold to Robbie Anderson for his first career touchdown pass, just the way CC drew it up.
Man, Jets fans right here, this sent electricity through them. They will remember this one. Mm-hmm. This guy, I believe, is going to be one of the all-time greats that we've ever seen play this game. He has the head for it. Robbie Anderson is my guy. I'm spending a lot of time with him. Had a little trouble off the field. One of the true deep threats that we have in the National Football League.
And look at the catch, because that's great coverage. The cornerback gets both hands on it at different times. He still comes down with it.
Finally, Raiders-Rams, Marshawn Lynch, taking them all into the end zone.
I mean,
Nick, now how smart are these guys now?
I mean, credit to Marshawn, but what is 58 doing? You're
working for the other team.
You're jumping in the wrong direction.
You're going the wrong
Like, what are you doing here?
That's
man.
What you call, let's not work harder. Let's just try to work a little bit.
Smarter. I mean, and Marshawn, by the way, God, he just runs so angry. He wasn't super effective last night, but he was scary as ever. I mean, he is so tough, man. You got what? That's about 3,000 pounds a person. Right there.
Beast mode. All right, let's play a little what if. What if the Raiders still had Khalil Mack? Would they have beaten the Rams last night? Could they have beaten the Rams last night? Who knows? But Mack did dominate in his first game with the Chicago Bears, scoring on a pick six, strip sacking DeShone Kizer. As a friendly reminder, Mack was traded by the Raiders to the Bears less than 2 weeks ago for two first-round picks. John Gruden had an interesting explanation for the trade before the game last night.
Obviously, Khalil Mack didn't want to play here. You know, that's what's being missed here. He was under contract, Lisa. You know, he was under contract. He never showed up for an OTA. He never showed up for training camp. And it was obvious he wasn't going to show up for the season. So, you know, don't forget that. We have to get ready to play. And I want players that want to be here, that want to help us put this thing back in high gear.
Shown up if he got paid. Just saying. What was your reaction to his comments, Nick?
My reaction to his comments are those comments made me so aggravated that at the beginning of the show I was blaming Gruden for false starts. Like, I'm so annoyed with his commentary that I'm maybe being
Everything.
A little irrational.
Yeah, the stadium's old as Gruden's fault.
Right. I mean, why are they playing what? Baseball diamond. Fix it, Gruden. All right, listen. By that standard, then I guess Aaron Donald didn't want to be a Ram for two years running. I guess Julio Jones temporarily this offseason didn't want to be a Falcon. I guess there's a lot of guys that didn't want to be on their teams because they didn't show up.
Well, I do know 10 years ago when he was coaching, they didn't have that fifth-year option. Mm-hmm. So maybe they need to explain to Gruden in this new NFL
what that is.
Yes.
And that it is not for a player of Khalil Mack's caliber. Aaron, by the way, the Rams didn't do this to Aaron Donald, didn't try to go nuclear even when he was holding out prior to – he held out after year three, missed all of training camp, missed the first game. They brought him back, won Defensive Player of the Year. He holds out again, and they give him a contract. But the part of that commentary that I find – the most disingenuous is the he obviously wasn't going to show up for the regular season. You don't know that.
No.
I don't know that. And it would be shocking if that were accurate. Like, I know that L. Bell is now missing games, so we might think that that is typical, but it is not. Got L. Bell is missing games in a situation where he's been franchised in consecutive years. Dwayne Brown missed games last year in a situation where he had deep disagreement.
What has been the traditional, since the fifth year option, what's been the traditional reaction to the players after missing OTAs and after missing training camp? What do they normally do?
They show up prior to week one. They show up going into week one, if even if they haven't gotten a new contract. And usually they get a contract if they're anywhere close to clear.
Right. And the reason why they show up at week number one is to minimize the risk. They're not going to be out there playing for free. And in training camp, no one's being paid. NFL salaries are about the first week of the season. That's why the guys in that fifth-year option show up the first week when they start issuing the game checks.
And so I just find it totally disingenuous.
Isn't this what you guys have talked about the whole time? You trade him away for two first-round picks. Your goal is for those two first-round picks to turn into a guy like Khalil Mack so you could pay him, keep him, and he can help your team, which you saw they needed that pass rush.
This is what I can guarantee you. If they do happen to find lightning in the bottle, if they do happen to have someone like Khalil Mack, you know what's going to happen? Under the current collective bargaining agreement, if they're successful in year number five, you know what they're going to be doing? The same thing that Khalil Mack did. And by that time, the salary cap's going to be over $200 million. And John Gruden's going to be in for a shock then that, hey, maybe this guy just don't want to be there. I like the fact that Khalil Mack is not saying anything in his class act about it. Gruden's going about it the wrong way. Gruden realizes that there's a medium out there called TV. And let me try to utilize it to change this storyline in my favor.
Which is not working.
It's not working because it's not the truth.
Right.
He should tell him the truth. It's from a financial standpoint. Right now, we didn't feel like it was best for the organization to sign this player to a long-term contract, but I can assure Raiders fans, Raiders Nation, that we're going to put a competent team out there. We are going to sign our players, but it wasn't in our best interest to sign Khalil Mack. That would, even though people might not like it, it makes sense, and that's the truth to the matter.
Well, but the other part of it is the Raiders are going with this story that, listen, it's just impossible to have two $20 million a year players. Well, someone should tell the Vikings that, because the Vikings gave Kirk Cousins a three-year deal over, it was $27, $28 million per year, fully guaranteed, knowing this offseason. They're not going to bring everybody back on their defense, but knowing there are multiple players on the defense, they won't get 20, but they will get 14 to 18. You can go across the league. The Steelers know that they have a quarterback making 20-plus and a wide receiver making 18. There are plenty of teams in the league that say, hey, it's not ideal to have this high percentage of your cap attributed to just a couple players, but if they're good enough players, and Mack obviously is, it's worth it.
Good teams, good organizations, it all starts with talent. All right? They don't start the NFL draft with the seventh round. Let's draft the guys with the least amount of talent, put this team together. I don't care what kind of team, however you make it up, even go to New England. It starts with talent. It starts with Belichick, and it starts with Brady, and we talked about Gronk. That's how the New England way starts. And any other team that you're going to start with, it starts with talent. You can't be trying to find role players. You need to find some talent, some superstars, and then you start adding other little things around it. That's how you're able to win with good organization and great teams.
And Khalil Mack, on a pitch count, equaled the production pass rushing-wise. In fact, if you include the turnovers forced, exceeded the production of the entirety of the Raiders' defense yesterday. The Raiders' defense yesterday got one sack. Khalil got one sack. Forced one fumble. Khalil forced one fumble. Had zero picks and had zero fumbles recovered. Khalil had one of those each. The entire Raiders' defense hit the quarterback twice in that game. Bruce Irvin had the one really good play.
Yep.
Coming around, hacking at the arm. And by the way, Bruce Irvin is a better player as your secondary pass rusher.
Yes.
When you can double-team Bruce Irvin, he's limited. When you have to double-team that superhuman, then Bruce Irvin is a better player. There's no getting around it.
The more you hear Gruden talk, the more you realize the Raiders were never going to pay Khalil Mack, no matter where Khalil Mack was going to go.
But can I add one more thing real quick? If they knew that, then some of the offseason doesn't make any sense. If you know we're trading away our best player, you don't simultaneously make yourself the team with the most 30-plus-year-old guys in the league and the oldest team in the league. If you know we're rebuilding, you don't sign Jordy Nelson, you don't bring back Marshawn Lynch, you don't do the things they did. They seem to be acting in different directions simultaneously.
And you can't have the oldest team in the NFL.
That exactly.
Right. I mean, like, you can't have the oldest team in the NFL. That means I'm trying to go for it. You know who they faced last night? A team trying to win. A team that called them up and said, we'll take him. We'll take him for a year.
And figure it out.
And figure it out. Yes.
Absolutely. The Rams said, we'll trade for him now and maybe trade him ourselves later, but we'd like the talent on our team.
Khalil Mack with the Raiders was a head-scratcher. Another head-scratcher on the other side, Dez Bryant. He thinks he could have saved the Cowboys against the Panthers. That's next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. We are going viral. Marshawn Lynch put the team on his back on this amazing touchdown run, living up to his beast mode nickname. However, he hasn't always been beast mode. Take a look at this. Last night on Monday Night Football, they showed this throwback high school picture of the beast.
Oh, man.
Among the many Twitter reactions to this, man looks like he's about to write some beast code.
Okay, that's a funny tweet. This is also unfair to Marshawn Lynch. And whoever provided him with this photo, I feel like he's got a lawsuit against him.
He's adorable.
Okay, but that is not.
Very good looking
man. But it misrepresents that in high school, he was still Marshawn Lynch. I don't know how. I don't know what Walgreens he took this picture at. That his mama made him do, but this is not who he was.
Man, he just took this one picture so he could put it on his application so he can get in the Cal. That's why he's trying to get. Man, they weren't going to let him in the Cal. Marshawn Lynch is not Cal material.
I've seen Marshawn Lynch pictures from when he was in Oakland growing up, and he was still. It's not like he had some late life realization.
Oh, no.
No, so he's been this guy.
What are you saying? This is just a snapshot
yes,
in history?
I'm saying it's exactly. Chris said a college application or a job application or something he needed. Yeah.
Scrub it. It's like scrubbing a resume.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all have one of those.
He got a little Urkel.
I bet Marshawn was angry when he came out of the game and heard this picture's out in the world.
Time for some stories to start your morning. On Sunday, Rob Gronkowski had 7 catches, 123 yards, and a touchdown in the Patriots' win over the Texans. And on Monday, Tom Brady said Gronk could be the greatest tight end to ever play the game. CeCe, how crucial is Rob Gronkowski to Tom Brady in this Patriots' offensive success?
He's critical, and Nick came up with the word. It's because he has variety. He has versatility. I mean, he's one of the smartest football players. Well, how do you know that? Everyone talks about how hard the system is in New England. We've seen veteran receivers struggle there.
How many positions can he play?
6. Play both tight ends, can play the fullback, can play outside, but both guys can play in the slot. You can move him as an H-back. 6 or 7, how many is that?
It's a bunch.
He's real good.
Second time.
Yeah. One more time, you got
yourself. All the positions, except for guard and quarterback, he can figure out essentially.
Yes.
And so he is, of course, he's critical to what they do because in the red zone where the Patriots are as efficient as any team in the league, since he came into the league, first in yards, first in catches, first in touchdowns in the red zone, not amongst tight ends, amongst players. That's how dominant of a red zone threat he's been. Yeah, he's critical to what they do, even though they still win a lot of games without him because they're New England.
How much could he do, though, without Tom Brady?
He'd still be great.
All right.
Wouldn't have quite the numbers. He'd still be great.
On to the Browns now. Still talking about how the Browns didn't lose on Sunday, nor did they win. Josh Gordon scored a touchdown in the tie with the Steelers. He wasn't even supposed to start. Hugh Jackson called Gordon starting a miscommunication. All right, see, what do you make of Gordon's performance?
Man, his performance was outstanding. A guy who's missed a lot of football and just his overall story. I mean, it's an amazing story. But his catch right here, This was to get the game tied late in the game. It was clutch. He's a big-time player. I would love to see him do well. It's more compelling to me, given my background. I'm pulling for Josh.
I must be honest, not to be a downer here. Watching this play made me a little wistful at what we've missed over the last 4 years. What this player's true natural ability is, and that we've missed almost half a decade of him playing football, which what could have been his prime because of his own demons.
People might talk about the catch here. Then people might talk about the footwork that was even better. But his ability to also get down on the ground and be able to avoid that safety, he could be forced out or the ball could be jarred out. Spectacular catch.
It's a great play.
All right, sticking in the AFC South, the Titans placed Delanie Walker on IR after suffering a brutal injury in week one. See, you were at this game. What happened here?
Oh, it was awful. I can kind of predict it was going to happen. Typically in the middle of the field, when you get the ball and you try to straight arm a guy, when you hit him in his chest or his upper body, what he does is he puts dead weight on you and swings his legs around your legs. And that's where his ankle got trapped up under it. It's unfortunate. I did spot it. People criticized me because I was calling the game and said, we got a gruesome injury. You're getting ready to see. But that was just my natural reaction to seeing it.
It was. I was listening to this game because you were calling it, and it was. Listen, it's something announcers typically don't do because they don't want to be wrong on something like this, but it was like watching a game next to you on the couch. You saw it as the play happened. You shouted, oh, it's a gruesome injury. I think he dislocated his ankle. And I got nervous for the player and nervous for you, if I'm being honest, because I'm like, but, I mean, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. And it was, and by the way, for the Titans, this is a big loss for them. It's a big loss, and it's awful for Delanie Walker.
Their number one receiver, Brady talked about Gronk being the best ever. This is the most underrated tight end we have in the league right now.
Wow. All right, finally, we have Matt Patricia and his debut as the Lions head coach. Lions lost 48-17 last night to the Jets. Biggest week one loss for Detroit since 1991. CeCe, how much does Patricia deserve blame in this game?
Well, I mean, who else are we going to blame? When they hired Matt Patricia, he decided, well, because based on the contract, too, with Matthew Stafford, I'm going to keep the offensive staff. I'm going to keep the coordinator. I'm going to keep those things in place. Like, I mean, who else are we going to blame?
You're
the guy now. I mean, no, but you're the coach, though. You're going to get some blame. Your team was not prepared. The game plan that they had going against the Jets defense. Now, obviously, it seems like, Nick, and you brought this to my attention, as far as the Jets players, what they felt like in preparation, that they could prepare.
They said that Stafford was tipping his pitches, essentially. Multiple Jets players after the game, and I think it was Rich Shemenia of ESPN that originally reported this, so credit to him, that they knew what he was doing, that they knew his hand signals, so they knew where he was going with the football before.
And that just came from studying. They all talked about
the
it.
Film
we just studied him and studied
right.
him.
Right, so Matthew Stafford, he's going to take responsibility for what he did, but the coach decided to bring that staff back because they've had success throwing the ball. They've added a running back that they might have some type of running attack. But Matt Patricia, for some type of reason, he got a head coaching job because he was in New England. It couldn't be because of that great defense in New England. So he's running that Detroit defense that faced a rookie quarterback. Well, what is Belichick's record against rookie quarterbacks? He demolishes them, embarrasses them.
Yeah.
And Matt Patricia's back there think he's calling the puppet strings, but no. Belichick does that because now he comes here in his first game in Detroit facing a rookie quarterback, and the rookie quarterback has success. So I have a lot to blame on the rookie coach in Detroit because that game plan was not the type of game plan that you want to. You want to put pressure on a rookie quarterback, and I didn't see that from Detroit.
You mentioned Belichick dominating rookie quarterbacks. I mean, this is not just a rookie quarterback he's going up against. It's a rookie quarterback who's the youngest quarterback to make a start in this league in 70 years, in his first start ever. So it's a rookie, like, it's his rookie game of his rookie season.
Right, yes.
And this quarterback, after one awful play, completes 80% of his passes for 10 yards per attempt on your defense. How about, again, let's take away everything the Lions offense did bad. Take away everything Stafford did. You think Matt Patricia's happy with letting the Jets run the ball 36 times for $170?
Yeah, to an offensive line that was supposed to be a question mark?
Right, like I joke, like Patricia has that pencil, but his sheet's laminated. I don't know what the pencil's there for other than to make him look like a smart guy or because Belichick has the pencil. Because Belichick uses the pencil because he has
understand.
Thing
he came from the Belichick way. Why is he not?
Because it doesn't work through osmosis.
Okay.
No, it's not.
It's one of those kind of things I tell people that if you sleep in my garage next to my Mercedes, you're going to wake up and just be tired and have a stiff back. You're not going to be a car. Like, it's because you're around the building. That don't make you. And Belichick, every one of these coaches, the last five of them, when they leave, they lose. Charlie Weiss, what's he doing now? He's doing radio. Why? Because he was losing. Josh McDaniel, he lost and came back into the nest. Why? Because he was a loser. Bill O'Brien, all of them have. Romeo Crennel, our friend Coach Mangini. Hey, man, holler if you see a player in the street. All of them have gotten battered when they left the nest.
But yet teams continue to go right back to the nest. They continue to go right back because for some reason they're like the next guy that comes out of under his tutelage is going to be the guy.
There was a period in this league where what was the best path to becoming an NFL head coach? It wasn't to be the son of a Shanahan. It wasn't to be – it was to be either Ray Lewis's defensive coordinator or Tom Brady's offensive coordinator. Every single one of those guys for years became a head coach somewhere. Weiss went to college to do it.
Yes.
But all of them did it somewhere. And
why is that? Because it's on the top of their resume.
Top of the resume.
I coached this guy.
Right. And Bill O'Brien's the latest in Houston, and now we're seeing the D coordinator as well. But we do a I'm going to try to change one thing as far as at least on this show, but I hope the media in general does this. We do a bad job when coaches leave. When a coordinator gets a job, we always assume the team he's leaving is going to be worse off because he must be great because he got promoted. Sometimes when a coordinator leaves, it's better for the team that lost him. Sometimes the guy who replaces Matt Patricia is going to be better, and Matt Patricia is going to be exposed. Now, that one game, again, I'm not going to overreact to one game, but I was skeptical of Patricia beforehand because I didn't see some great schematics on the Patriots defense.
Yes.
I didn't see these great adjustments. I didn't see guys who, oh, you made this guy. I see on their offense guys that are nothing somewhere else, go to the Pats, they're great, they leave, they're nothing. Again, I see Chandler Jones. He was very good with the Pats. He leaves, he's even better. Jamie Collins, you can't get Jamie Collins to run your plays. He leaves, he's still starting for an NFL team. Like, I'm curious to see how this one works out.
I just knew we were going to have this day because I remember the day when the Patriots won the Super Bowl. I think after 2016, remember it was them against the world and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And Matt Patricia got off the plane with that Roger Goodell shirt on.
Clown nose.
Yeah, yeah, okay. If you wear a clown outfit, every once in a while, you might be the clown. And that's what they did against a rookie quarterback in his debut. Didn't look good.
In fact, all the rookie coaches this past
0-7.
They all lost.
And by the way, none of them play each other week two, so they could be 0-7 again. We'll see.
All right, moving on to the Dallas Cowboys now. After scoring just 8 points on Sunday, many wondered if the team missed the services of former receiver Dez Bryant. After a fan asked Dez on Twitter to return to the Cowboys, Dez tweeted, "Nah, I'm okay. I'd rather go somewhere I can showcase my skills for real. If I line up next to Gronk, Hogan, Edelman, I'm for sure getting a one-on-one matchup. Plus, I won't be getting criticized and controlled for expressing my love for the game. Washington is cool as well." Then he called out the predictability of the Cowboys' play calling. "It's kind of cool calling out all the signals and knowing which route players are about to run." And after a tweet that offensive coordinator Scott Linehan didn't speak to the media, Dez tweeted a laughing, crying emoji. By the way, we should mention it's been reported that Washington is not interested in the services of Dez Bryant. Dez is now just throwing teams out where he would like to work, which is a novel concept. All right, guys, Dez has a lot to say. Seemingly few teams want to hear it. What do we make of all of this?
All right, so a lot of this is foolishness. However, you ever on Twitter and you see someone who you really don't like or someone who you more notably just disagree with a lot and they make a great point? You're like, damn. I don't want to agree with this guy, but he made a really good point. I think a lot of what Dez does on Twitter is foolishness, but his comments about the Cowboys' offense being predictable, not being creative, being too conservative from the offseason to the preseason to now, after watching week one, I do kind of see the man's point. I do kind of, on that level, I do understand what he's saying. Now, as far as him saying, "I'd like to go to a place where I only get one-on-one coverage," well, that speaks to where you evidently have acknowledged you are as a player, Where if you think you're the level of player that you can only thrive if you have one-on-one coverage with Gronk and Edelman and Brady, a lot of people would like to be there. But I don't think his point about the Cowboys' creativity is wrong, even if he's a flawed messenger for it.
Twitter, it's a strange tool. It's really, really strange because Dez is he's unemployed now, right?
Correct.
He's trying to get a job at the National Football League.
Correct. As you would call it, looking for gainful employment. Yeah.
To me, it doesn't seem like the way to be able to get back on a team is by utilizing Twitter to be able to say things about the Cowboys, to be able to respond to fans and everything. It's just not a good look. Now, I know Dez is going to spend a lot of time living in Dallas. I know he's got a home there and everything. I know he's just not going to abandon Dallas. And I believe he's going to regret this. And if I was an NFL team, now Dez is more likely to get signed now because we're past the first game where you don't have to guarantee him his old salary and everything. But if I'm a team like Washington, because it's kind of funny how Dez mentions Washington, and then all of a sudden Washington comes out and says, no, we have no interest in the player. I can guarantee you this. I'm willing to bet a lot of money Dez won't be playing for New England. All right? Like, and if he do, he need to put at least a capital on Hogan's name. Hogan's like, give me some respect. You got Gronk with a big G. You got Edelman with a big E. Why the Hoagie Meister? Why he got to have small letters in all my name and everything? It's just not the Patriot way. I just don't believe he's utilizing Twitter the right way because a lot of times when you're with a team for your whole career, and I've noticed this just going around the league, you develop a reputation. And then once people meet you, like, it's how do you disprove the reputation or how do you live up to the reputation?
How do you confirm the
reputation?
Right.
So now, Dez got some bad media on him before he hit free agency, all right? That's just the real on Dez Bryant. And a lot of it was Dez didn't know the signals. Dez didn't know what to do. You couldn't grow the offense because of Dez's limited football IQ or limited position. And then now he's on Twitter talking about, be careful now.
And, like, you mentioned Washington, New England. How about a team that has high expectations for themselves, has cap room, has an enormous need? How do they look at this? That team I'm talking about, San Francisco. San Francisco needs a wide receiver. They want to win right now.
I've been saying it from the beginning.
Right.
They had to be, and I was saying it out loud that maybe they might hear. But I believe that they have intel inside there that they don't want to bring Dez into that locker room.
And maybe after the first – so they clearly didn't want to bring him in before the season. But maybe they watch week one and they're like, ooh, Jimmy G going to take some time now. We've kind of ratcheted up expectations.
Yeah, their best wide receiver took a knee to the thigh. He's got a strained quad in Goodwin. And their best option is a tight end. I mean, it's from a tight end position. They're going to their tight end as their number one target.
And he got the Jerry Rice endorsement. Came out and said, of course.
Of course. And so the point that I'm making is if they were skeptical of him, but then those things happen. The injury. Kittle, who's their number one option, he drops, or he's one of their tight ends. He drops what would have been a touchdown pass. Jimmy G struggles. And they're like, all right, maybe we should rethink Dez. Do these tweets help or hurt you?
Of course.
Like, you got to ask yourself, a wise man once told me, before you make any decision, as a public person or as an important person, or maybe just no matter who you are, you got to ask yourself this question. Where's the win? Where's the win in going to this club tonight? Where's the win in sending this tweet? Where's the win in applying for this job? And if there is no win, what are you doing?
What advice would you give Dez Bryant at this point now? He's had a number of teams that have already said they're not interested in him, even though they do need a wide receiver. What would you say to Dez Bryant besides stay off Twitter?
I've given Dez advice. Dez don't want to listen. Dez should have gotten better at the position a couple years ago. Dez should have been concentrating on his fundamentals when his athletic skill started to deteriorate. He should have started thinking about, how can I get out of my route? How can I be better in the red zone? How can I add maybe a route or two in the red zone that when this franchise, I can be a commodity to the Cowboys? That was Dez's biggest problem. The biggest fan of Dez Bryant has always been Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. And then once he lost that, what did he have? We have a player that still has talent and still should be playing. There's a lot of football players that's not as good as Dez Bryant that were playing yesterday and on some Sunday. Dez should be in this league. But what he has done since free agency has not helped him. And that's why he's unemployed.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, are the Rams looking like Super Bowl contenders? We're not being dramatic or anything. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, the Rams beat up the Raiders last night in a 33-13 final. Jared Goff threw for 233 yards and two touchdowns, while Todd Gurley had 147 total yards and a touchdown. On the other side of the ball, new addition Marcus Peters had a pick six to help seal the victory. Here's head coach Sean McVay on the win.
You never take for granted a win in this league. So it was a great job by our guys making some plays in the second half. Defensively, to be able to get three turnovers, I thought was the key to the game. But it was a good start. You'll never take a win for granted, and we got a lot of respect for the Oakland Raiders and the problems that they present.
What is with having no lighting in any of the press conferences? It's
Jenna's
like they're all in
Jenna
the dark.
Jenna gets very bothered by this. Tom Brady, who
Sam
she finds lovely, got whited out yesterday.
And Sam Darnold was like underneath some kind of tent.
We'll work
on
it.
Anyway, Nick, what were your impressions of the Rams' win last night?
As advertised, you get quality quarterback play from Jared Goff, and that's my biggest X factor for them for the season. They just have overwhelming talent. And Jared Goff's one real issue last year was connecting on the deep ball with Sammy Watkins. Yesterday, while he didn't have a ton of deep ball connections to Brandon Cooks, they drew two pass interference penalties that were blatant interferences. Those were as good as catches, except didn't show up in the stat sheet as such. And Aaron Donald, while didn't have the statistical production, you saw his disruption up to and including what I thought was a really tough roughing the passer penalty on him. Marcus Peters, that's why you go get a player who on a per-game basis is, in a short sample of his career, the biggest ball hawk in NFL history. That's who Marcus Peters is. You have Aqib Talib on the other side, and the best all-around running back in football in Todd Gurley. Like, this is a team that, on paper, should be outstanding, that should be competing for that 12-13 wins to put them in line for a bye in the NFC, and that's what they looked like last night. The first half, kind of feeling out the Raiders.
Yeah.
And in the second half, they pitched a shutout and dominated them.
Nick, you and I have watched a lot of football games together, right?
Yeah. Couldn't this week. You were out working.
Yeah, it's so sad. Couldn't this week. One of the things that you enjoy that you had never, ever experienced before is I can predict a lot because I've seen so many games, so many films. I can predict where the ball's going to go, formation and tendencies. But when I watch the Rams, they're one of the few teams. I don't know where the ball's going to go. I mean, they ran so many play action fakes. I was like, okay, here comes Todd Gurley again. Oh, it's another play action. They ran that speed sweep. I thought, are they going to give it to him again? Oh, they ran another play action. Like, Sean McVay is in his ability to be creative. All right? And one of the things about calling plays is you got to be able to utilize all your talent, which they did. They get the ball to everyone. But how do you match up things where everything looks very, very similar? They master that. Like, all their deep shots down the field, all their play actions come off of a run action that I've seen before. So they're hard to defend. I'm not even going to get into Wade Phillips and what he's going to do with the defense and everything because they had some question marks there. It seems like they shored those things up. But the thing that I think is really special is Jared Goff running this offense and their ability to attack all parts of the field and running the ball, passing the ball, play action. I think it's very special. It's going to be an exciting year for Rams fans.
Well, when we talk about the lack of creativity with Dallas, doesn't it help to be able to call plays like that, multiple calls, when you have the personnel that you know will be able to execute it?
Well, they have the type of personnel that fits the scheme. They have guys who are receivers that can run speed sweeps. They have Todd Gurley that in the I formation, that's the way he's been since high school. They run play action off of that because everyone thinks when Todd gets in the I, they're going to run the ball and run a stretch or inside zone play. No, he's got that, man. He's a special coach. He's got that little, he's what John Gruden was 10 years ago. He's what Kyle Shanahan is. Like, that's who this guy is, and we need to recognize. Mike Martz, remember he took over the greatest show on earth? And you're like, wow, look at this. Whew, deep end cuts, speed, Marshall Faulk. Man, this is special, and we need to recognize when we see special. Let's see what they do week in and week out from a creativity standpoint, because I believe this is just the beginning.
And I know it's going to sound odd that I'm going to give them credit for struggling in the first half, and that's not what I'm trying to do here, but I'm going to give them enormous credit for, despite struggling in the first half, clearly not changing what their game plan going into the game was, which was keep it close through the first half and lean on them. You got an all-pro left tackle. You have a dominant running back in Todd Gurley. You have, on the other side of the ball, your D-line. By the third quarter, that Raiders O-line, as good as it is going to have felt Sue and Donald hitting them. And by the second half, if it's close, and it was close, they were down three at halftime, we should be able to take over this football game. And Todd Gurley having 16 second-half carries, not touches, 16 second-half carries. His only big play in the first half was a jet sweep, what they called it a pass, but it was the old, we're going to give our quarterback a free touchdown. Like, he tossed it 1 foot in the air, and Gurley scores on it. But Todd Gurley, 16 for 89 on the ground in the second half. The Raiders, conversely, in the second half, they have, what, 100 and, I want to get this exactly right. They had 100 yards passing in the second half. They get two turnovers out of Derek Carr. Like, the Rams' offense was not there in the first half, but they were close. And then they took over in the second half.
Like, one of the little things, Nick, from a coaching standpoint, we're going to start to see this in football a lot. When we see this, typically we see the speed sweep, the quarterback in the shotgun, he gets the ball. And they have a guy coming in motion, and they hand it to him. The reason why the quarterbacks now are getting the ball and tapping it is because that's the best way to give the ball to a skilled guy in space, a guy who doesn't practice handoff. Wide receivers, we don't practice handoffs. So Todd Gurley does, but we saw it in college football. We're going to see it also in the pros.
We saw it in Kansas City twice.
It's easier for them to catch the ball as a wide receiver when a quarterback gets it and he puts it at eye level compared to reaching down and you have to make a pocket because the exchanges become somewhat bad. So it's an in vogue thing that we're going to see a lot more.
The Chiefs scored two touchdowns on this, both with wide receiver type players. DeAnthony Thomas, who's kind of a do-everything guy, and Tyreek Hill.
Yes.
And the other reason they like it, I would imagine, is it's not a fumble if it's fumbled.
Missed.
It's not a fumble if it's fumbled. That sounds wrong. But it's not if it touches the ground,
it's a pass.
So
it's a pass.
As opposed to if you hand it off and there's a fumbled exchange.
Yeah, there's two big benefits. For one, the wide receivers are used to ball being in their air, and it's easy for them. It's friendly for them.
Right.
And the other thing is friendly for the offense, that even if you have a miscommunication or something, it's a dead play.
It's going to cause a lot of...
Go ahead.
All right, well, it's going to cause a lot of fantasy football drama.
Yeah,
All of a sudden, you're like, I'm playing Jared Goff. He got a touchdown pass for that nonsense.
It's good football, man. It's advancing.
We have to take a break. Coming up, are the Packers too relying on Aaron Rodgers? Next on First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First.
Do your thing, Jenna.
Okay. Aaron Rodgers was the hero on Sunday, returning from injury to lead the Packers to a comeback win over the Bears. But head coach Mike McCarthy says he's not sure if Rodgers will be playing week two against the Vikings. Last year, the Packers went 3-6 after Rodgers went down. See, they know he's vital to this team. Are they too dependent on him, though?
Of course. Haven't we talked about that all offseason? Dallas, lack of weapon. Green Bay, man, they just rely on this guy. He's that good. But just get him some help. Like, get him some help. Get him a consistent running game. Like, we don't want someone like Aaron Rodgers to have to do it all by himself. But he has created magic because he is by himself. And we've seen that. When he's out of the lineup, they have no chance to win. We saw a Vikings team through the last couple years. They've lost their quarterback a couple times. They still had a chance to win. With Aaron Rodgers, man, it's either feast or famine. I would like more support around him. And I think that they have that now. And, Nick, you pointed out this yesterday, earlier in the show when I wasn't on. They got some defensive stops.
Yes.
Like, this wasn't a defense you could just run through. We saw Aaron in the playoffs play spectacular, but the defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. And now, at least, they went out and drafted some people, a defensive secondary. You saw them come up with some stops in critical positions.
And that D-tackle they drafted in the first round a couple years ago, Kenny Clark, I think is his name, he played very well.
Yeah, Nick Perry came up with the key sack. They drafted him a few years ago. You know, so he hadn't been able to get a consistent pass rush, but you can start to see those younger players emerging.
Here's the thing. C's talking about more help around Rodgers. What I would like is a little more help behind Aaron Rodgers. Because when we talk about the great quarterbacks in this league, there is only one thing that almost all of them have on Rodgers. If we talk about Brady, if we talk about Rivers, if you even want to talk about Stafford, if you want to talk about Peyton when he was playing, or even Eli, they're healthier than him. Those guys don't miss games. and Aaron has had two collarbone injuries, and then we saw him knocked out of a game, albeit just briefly. And the Packers couldn't hold water for a quarter. They didn't know Aaron Rodgers was coming back, but if he had said, guys, I'll be back in 15 minutes, I mean,
hold it down. You
got, like, teenage kids. Kids, I'm running to the store. I'll be right back. You get back.
Don't burn the house down.
The house is on fire. Basically. Like, you can't. For 15 minutes, DeShone Kizer lit the house on fire. Right. Now, Khalil Mack might have been the arsonist, but he certainly added some kerosene to it. Like, and that was the case last year.
Yep.
I'll never forget Mike McCarthy. He was so angry someone dared ask him. Someone dared ask him about Colin Kaepernick, and he said, I have spent time, blood, sweat, tears, draft picks on Brett Hundley and Joe Callahan. I love my quarterback room.
Where are they at?
Well, Brett Hundley's on a different team, and Joe Callahan is looking for gainful employment. He's right now not on a practice squad, not on a team anywhere.
Yeah.
And you bring in DeShone Kizer as the backup. It would be nice if Aaron Rodgers, because he does get dinged, and because especially in the new NFL concussion protocol and such, you might have to miss a couple series.
Mm-hmm.
If you could put someone in, not to be a force multiplier, but the Packers have had, what's the opposite of a force multiplier? A force divider. Someone that just actively works against your interests while he is out there. And so, yeah, it'd be nice to see him have a good running game or a better defense. But how about something cheap and easy? Competent backup quarterback. Because he hadn't had that for as long as I can remember.
This isn't a strap cash team. This isn't a team that just doesn't have enough money to go out and get weapons. Like, why do we know this? The Packers know this, and they don't really do anything about it. They could have kept Jordy Nelson, who Aaron Rodgers loved and wanted.
This is all we can, based on the capital, though. Devontae Adams is their star now. Jordy Nelson's aged. They were paying him a lot of money. He had a good career with the Packers, but they had to build him. It's not like they don't have wide receivers. It's how, from a philosophy standpoint, we're not going to participate in free agency.
Right.
Well, why? We got cash. Like, we can make money moves. Like, well, why wouldn't we? It was just their philosophy. Now, we hope that what we've seen with the change in coaches, the change in participating in some free agency, went out and got Jimmy Graham. Like, we just hope that the philosophy's changed so we can enjoy the best quarterback that we've ever seen from a talent standpoint throw the football so we can make it to the postseason. They shouldn't be in a situation, and Nick, I believe that's a great point. It only takes a little bit of capital to have a backup, and they haven't had a competent backup since Hasselbeck left a number of years ago when he went to Seattle and became a full-time starter there.
It wasn't Rodgers' backup. He was Favre's backup.
Yes.
And I understand the old famous quote from the Colts GM, why don't you practice without Peyton Manning sometimes? And he said, because without Peyton Manning, we're bleeped, and we don't practice bleeped. Like, I understand the idea of, well, if Aaron Rodgers done for the season, we're screwed anyway. But I'm talking about being done for the season. I'm talking about a situation like last year where he can come back, and are the games going to matter? Or a situation like last night, or two nights ago, where he's just going to be out briefly. And here's something the Packers, one of the greatest organizations in sports history, I think it's so funny because Chris keeps saying the NFL is our 99th year, and the Packers on their background, it says they're 100th year.
Yeah, we kind of established on the back of the Packers.
Right. They started a year early. So they're a well-respected franchise, and understandably. But they're approaching 30 years of Favre Rodgers quarterbacking. And if you come out of that 30 years with three Super Bowl appearances and only two wins, you underachieved. Every team should not be held to the same standard. And if you go, just like the Colts, by the way, if they go 30 years of Manning to Luck, and they have right now, they're at two appearances, one victory. That is a failure. Period, point blank, that would be a failure. And so you can't let a Steelers of Neil O'Donnell to Big Ben have more success than Favre to Rodgers. Like, you just can't. And so I'm not assigning that to them. Rodgers has a lot of time left. But that's the trajectory they're on right now. And so that is about institutional, a failure to support some of the greatest players we've ever seen.
So the answer is yes, they are too dependent on Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, but they really are. Like, you need, especially with the new rules as far as the concussion protocol, like, a guy can miss some snaps. But, man, you can lose a game in three or four series, and you can see, man, if Aaron didn't come back in, You mean, at halftime, you could have gone home.
Again, we talk about how long the Packers have been playing football. 107 times. They've been down 17 points going into a fourth quarter. Yeah. They were 0-107. Why were they down that much? Because of the 10 minutes Kizer played. They would have been better off taking knees. And so, like, and that could be the difference between winning the division and not winning the division. Between when the Vikings are there, when the NFC is that good, every second matters. And to not have a competent backup again, I think that's unforgivable.
And as of today, we still don't know exactly what Aaron Rodgers' status is for this weekend. He hasn't mentioned that there's any
I wanted to ask you something about that. No, because after the game on the field with Michelle Tafoya, Rodgers said, "I'm playing next week." And then after the game, at the press conference, he couched it a little bit, and the coach couched it a little bit. Is that the type of thing that Rodgers can just flatly say, it's the Vikings, it's a big game, I'm playing?
Well, the adrenaline of coming off one of the greatest performances and their biggest rival besides the Bears happens to be the Vikings. And also the Vikings put a lick on him last year that he felt like wasn't a fair lick by Barr knocking him out. So, yeah, I can understand him saying that. But you take away the advantage if the coach follows it up at the press conference and say, yeah, Aaron will be playing. And also, I believe that next day, he's a lot sore than he thought he was going to be. So you have to dial it back and be like, well, because it's a competitive balance, too, at that point. Because if he ends up questionable, then what did you say after the press conference? What did you say on the morning after and everything? They could be held against him. So, no, I believe that he got sore. But also, from a competitive balance standpoint, let's make the Vikings prepare for both quarterbacks.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.